I'm Matthew Petty, and this is Intersection. House Bill 867, the so-called parent trigger bill, is making its way through the Florida legislature, but not without controversy. The bill is said to give parents a chance to trigger change if a school receives a failing grade, but some are saying it opens the door to the privatisation of schools. I'll talk with Florida State Representative Joe Saunders of Orlando and Patricia Levesque, Executive Director of the Foundation for Florida's Future, about parent trigger. That's ahead on Intersection. To talk more about the so-called parent trigger bill, I'm joined in the studio now by Florida State House Representative Joe Saunders from Orlando. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for having me.
And joining us also by phone is Patricia Levesque, the Executive Director of the Foundation for Florida's Future, the nonprofit education policy organization founded by former Florida Governor Jeb Bush. Thank you for joining us too.
Thank you, Matt, for having me.
House Bill 867, the Parent Empowerment and Education Bill, also known as the Parent Trigger Bill, aims to give parents a choice in what to do with failing schools. They can petition a chronically failing school to make significant changes. Patricia, now your organization supports this bill. Why do you think it's a good bill?
Well, I think when you travel the state and talk to school principals and teachers, one of the things that they always talk about is wanting to have more parental involvement, more parental engagement. And one of the ways, especially in failing schools, that we can get parents more engaged is to actually give them a greater say in what happens at their child's school. And that's really all that the bill does, is gives parents of children in failing schools a greater say in impacting school board decisions related to their child's school.
Do you not feel, though, that there are avenues, I guess, for parents to have some kind of input through parent-teacher associations and other avenues like that that have been around for a while for them to shape their children's education in some way now?
Sure. You know, the PTA is a great organization. They represent many parents, but they don't actually represent a lot of parents of students in failing schools. And I think that's one thing in talking to parents, again, of children in failing schools, a lot of them feel like they don't have any power to get engaged, or the only way to get engaged is to participate in the booster club or fundraising things. You know, these parents have children that are their most precious gift that they have. They want to make sure their child gets a great education. And so all the bill does is say, for parents of these children in failing schools, when the school board has to make federally required decisions about what to do with that school, give parents in that school an ability to impact or weigh in on that school board's decision.
Joe Saunders, I want to bring you in the conversation now. I mean, shouldn't parents have a say in deciding what does happen to failing schools? Do you think they need more of a say with a bill like this?
Well, let's start with a place that I think we can all agree. The quality of education in Florida, the quality of public education is improved when parents are engaged in the process, when they are thoughtful about what's happening with their children in classrooms. That's a place I think that we can all agree. Where I think we'll start to disagree is on what this bill actually does, the processes that it opens up, and the ramifications of what will come if it passes. I want to just come back to something that Patricia just said. You know, the idea that the Florida Parent Teacher Association organization, the Florida PTA, a long-established advocacy organization that has been fighting to protect schools in Florida for decades, is somehow not thinking about the F schools, I think is something that we have to push back against a little, because they have a long record of advocacy thinking about every single student. The fact that the School Board Association of Florida, the School Superintendent Association of Florida, parent organizations like the Florida PTA and Fund Education Now, the Florida Education Association are all opposed to this bill and, in fact, railing against it, I think begs the question of who actually wants this. Who is saying that they want the parent trigger bill to pass? Because not a single legitimate Florida parent-based organization is saying that it's something that we need to empower and engage parents in Florida.
Joe Saunders, when you look at other states, I mean, California, Texas, I think there are seven other states in total which have some form of parent trigger bill. Is it something that, you know, Florida shouldn't at least think about if other states are doing this as well?
I think it's fair to say that this is untested policy. It came out of California. A few other states have stepped up to adopt it, but very few states have actually engaged in the trigger part of this bill. And again, I think our job as legislators is to respond to what people need and what people want and what we hear from our constituents in Florida. We're not hearing a resounding call from parents across the state who want this bill. What you are hearing is some advocacy organizations, like the one that Patricia represents, stepping up to say that we need this, even though nobody's asking for it. That raises some flags for me. I see it as a problem. What I think we need to do to engage parents is talk about bills like one that Representative Ricardo Rangel from Kissimmee has forward, which would engage the education systems to incentivize wraparound schools. We have a great school like that at Evans High School here in Orange County. It pulls parents in, gives them the social services they need in some of the schools that are struggling the most, and makes them an integral part of the education of their children. There are better ideas that are tested and that are not nearly as controversial as the parent trigger.
Patricia Levick, what do you say to that idea that in some way the organization you represent somehow doesn't have the interests of genuine parents and parents who want change for schools that are failing at heart?
First of all, that's just not true. You know, what the foundation does is we advocate on behalf of parents of kids in public schools on policies that will help improve our public school system. And what is not true is that the parent trigger law is untested. It actually has been implemented in California in several ways that don't even make it to the public eye. I've talked with moms and grandmothers who have been the beneficiaries of the parent empowerment law in California, where when their school, by the state of California standards, was deemed failing, what they were able to do is petition their school board for more services for their kids, for after-school tutoring, for in-district reform, for a computer lab. Sometimes in these failing schools, that's all the parents want. And until you give those parents a legitimate seat at the table, until you give those parents some real leverage to get the attention of the school board, some of these parents would not have that ability to get a computer lab in their schools. That is the real effectiveness of the parent empowerment law in California, and it has worked.
Representative Joe Saunders, do you think there are some good points in the so-called parent trigger bill?
Let me just reiterate that I think Patricia and folks who are supportive of this bill, I think their intent is good. And so I can say that empowering and engaging parents in their children's education is something that we should all strive to do better. I think it is a helpful exercise to get into the weeds about what this bill will or won't do. So let's be really clear. What it will do is allow private interest to engage in a process that allows for people to be paid to go door to door to collect petitions. It does not create any kind of transparency in the campaign process that will come in convincing parents that this turnaround option, which everybody, just to say out loud, the part that most people are scared of is that a turnaround option to privatize a school, to convert it from a traditional public school into a charter school managed by a for-profit company, could result in the privatization of our schools. It does not in any way lay out a system for reporting donations that would be made to a campaign that would then could send mail to parents every day for a month saying, you must do this thing. There are huge gaps in the way the law is written in regulating, controlling, and bringing sunshine to how private interests might engage in this process. And that's the thing that people are the most afraid of. I will say there's one other part of the bill that isn't getting a lot of attention that I think could be devastating if we don't change it. There's language in the bill right now that says that if you are a child, if you are a teacher who receives a low score on a performance evaluation system, that you can never have the same child in your classroom more than 1 year in a row. Well, the intent there might make sense, but the impact that it could have in our schools could be devastating. Most high schools and middle schools only have one drama teacher. They only have one band teacher. They only have one PE teacher. And the flawed performance evaluation system we have today, a system that is not fully evolved by any stretch, if we layer this criteria on without being more thoughtful, we could result in blocking children from having access to programs that they love and remove the choice that parents should have to put their child in a program or in a teacher's tutelage that they really want. So I think there's a lot of parts of this bill that still need to be debated, and there's some very serious holes and issues.
I want to go back to the charter school option, because this is one of the options that parents will have under the bill to petition to convert the school into a charter school. Patricia Levesque, how effective do you think charter schools are in providing quality education to students in Florida?
Some research came out just last month that did a comparison of charter school performance in the state of Florida compared to all traditional public schools. And it should be important to note that charter schools in Florida serve a greater population of low-income or students with disabilities than our public schools as a whole. And the research showed that Florida charter schools do better academically at the elementary, middle, and high school level in helping students learn than traditional public schools. Now, that does not mean that our traditional public schools aren't also doing a fantastic job. That does not mean that every single charter school in the state is doing a fantastic job. But on the whole, charter schools in the state of Florida are doing quite well. And Florida is one of those states that has a really important policy in place where if a charter school gets two F's in a row, they're closed. So Florida does a really good job at making sure that we maintain high-quality charter schools in the state. But, Matt, we have to be really clear. The Parent Empowerment Bill is not about charter schools. It is about giving parents of children in failing schools a say in impacting what the school board gets to decide anyway about how to turn around that school. And in California, that has had the parent empowerment law in place for a couple of years, all of the doomsday scenarios that Representative Saunders and some of the opponents of the bill have painted have just not occurred. In fact, on the contrary, what happened in California is that parents of students at a failing school petitioned their school board for certain things that they wanted to happen at their school. And what happened is that the school board did everything, including the teachers' union. The teachers' union sent information out to these parents, many of whom were, again, low income, may not be originally from America, threatened to call immigration and customs enforcement officials on these parents, disallowed their petitions because the birth date that the parent had written down for the child, they couldn't read the handwriting of the parent. So many ridiculous things occurred in California because the school board didn't want to just listen and do what the parents, a majority of the parents at a school, wanted to have happen with their child's education. So a lot of the doomsday scenarios that continue to be painted about this bill did not occur in California.
There has been some bad press about charter schools, particularly in Orange County. We've had schools like Einstein Montessori was closed down recently, Imani Elementary School shut down a couple of years ago, and then North Star High School. There's some issues around that. So I think people do have genuine concerns about charter schools, and the fact that there is a charter school element in this bill, that does give people concern. I mean, do you think those concerns are legitimate?
The foundation absolutely supports high-performing, high-quality charter schools. What we don't support are charters that are fiscally mismanaged and charters where students aren't learning. And that's why we're very supportive of the policy in this state to close charters after they've received two Fs. We are very supportive of legislation that is moving in a separate bill to add more accountability. There are bills up here in Tallahassee designed to specifically address some of those things that occurred in Orange County, and we're supportive of those things. So as long as the state continues to move forward with making sure charters are accountable, making sure they're academically and fiscally sound, we support charter school policy in the state. And this bill doesn't change or impact charter school law. What this bill does is give parents of students in failing schools an ability to make a recommendation to their school board about how that school board intervenes and turns around that failing school.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm talking with Joe Saunders, State House Representative from Orlando, and Patricia Levesque, Executive Director of the Foundation for Florida's Future, about the so-called Parent Trigger Bill. What do you think about this bill? Is it a good bill? Does it have the best interests of parents and students at heart in Florida? You can contact us on Twitter and Facebook, and you can also contact us by our email address, intersection@wmfe.org. Representative Saunders, I know that you've had some input in drafting legislation to address some of those issues around charter schools. Do you think that can be addressed as well, or is that a completely separate issue from what we're talking about now?
Listen, I think that if Patricia and the foundation and the folks who were supporting Trigger were willing to remove or create an exemption that took the charter turnaround option out of this bill, it would completely change the reaction that people have to it. So I think it's not really fair to say that this isn't about charters. That diminishes the concerns that people like me have about what this really could do. It's funny, Matt, that you bring up the three charter schools that you just mentioned, because two of those are in my district. North Star Charter and Einstein Montessori of Union Park are both represented in my district. And I got to give a shout out. United Cerebral Palsy Charter, which just got renewed, is an example of another school that has a branch in my district that is an incredible charter school. So again, Patricia and I can agree that there are charters out there that are providing a high caliber quality education to kids. But there are some bad actors in that. And I think, look, it's also a red herring to say that the school board has the option of saying no to one of these turnaround options. There's language in the bill that specifically says that if a school board says no to what has been asked for and petitioned by parents, that it gets bumped up to a statewide process that has been a rubber stamp for years for approving charter schools and overturning school board decisions. There are legitimate concerns in our policy debate about the doors that this opens to for-profit, profit-share-driven management companies to come in and engage in a process without very much accountability and without very much transparency that could privatize some of our schools. And look, I've raised in committee that I'm concerned that there's no path back. Once we trigger a school, why isn't there language in the bill that says that you can trigger it back to a traditional public school? Why isn't there language in the bill that allows petitions who are parents of charter school students to trigger a charter school into a traditional public school? Those are the same parents as there are at traditional public schools. So there are inequities in this bill that need to be addressed if the folks who are supporting it really want to alleviate the concerns that people have. And I don't think that saying, well, it's just not true, the concerns we've raised aren't legitimate, they're not real, is the path forward. If we want policy that people can be supportive of and excited about, we've got to address the very real concerns that have been raised and will continue to be raised about this legislation.
Patricia Levesque, I want to ask you, how likely is it that some changes could be made to that bill, say, for example, taking out that issue of whether charter schools would be on the table as part of that parent trigger option?
Thanks for the question. First, I have to go back to something Representative Saunders said just to correct some misinformation that's out there. When he said the State Board of Education is a rubber stamp for charters, that is just not true, and the data shows that. When charter schools get appealed to the State Board right now, the State Board of Education, after reviewing the proposals, has agreed with school districts 50% of the time and has disagreed with local school boards about 50% of the time. And so if you're batting 50-50, I would not say that that's a rubber stamp process. As far as the issue of taking the charter school option out of the bill, first of all, federal law, it's not state law, it's federal law that gives the school boards four different options to impact and make decisions regarding turning around a failing school. So as Representative Saunders just said, there are some good charter schools. There are lots of good charter schools in the state. He even acknowledged some in his district. I would just have to ask the question, why would we then say to parents of children in failing schools, you get to impact, you get to make recommendations to your school board, but one of the options that your school board gets to pick from, one of the options that we acknowledge that there are good charter schools in the state, but we're going to deny those parents of kids at failing schools an opportunity to recommend one of those options. If we're going to give parents the ability to make recommendations about how to turn around their child's failing schools, we should have all the options on the table for those parents to pick from, to select from. And one other thing that, you know, there's been this red herring of an argument out there that these very greedy for-profit management companies are going to spend a lot of money on this particular process. And let me just say, people can say that over and over and over and over again, but it makes absolutely no sense. Anybody that wants to start a charter school in the state of Florida can go to their school district right now, pick wherever they want to in the county that they want to start a charter school, put in an application with the school board, and within likely a year can get an approval to run a charter school in this state, a one-year process. What the process that is outlined in this particular parent empowerment bill is basically a three-year process before the school gets its first F, the parents get to make an impact and a recommendation to the school board. After the second year, if the school is still failing, maybe in year three, the school board implements the recommendation of the parent. So why would any charter provider not just follow the one-year process to open a charter school now? Why would they take a path of a three-year process? It's just an absolute red herring, and it distracts from the real purpose of the bill. The purpose of the bill is to empower parents of children in failing schools to have an impact and a say in recommending to their school board how they want to see their child's school turned around.
Representative Saunders, I want to ask you then, I mean, do you think there's some other option if you were to say you don't like the parent trigger bill, but there's some other option which could give parents, say, more input or more say into what happens to a failing school?
I do, but let me just go back quickly to one point that Patricia made. When she says that the privatization argument is a red herring, I will respectfully push back on that. There is a profit motive here, okay? It's not the same process. This does not outline the same process that a charter school goes into, or a board, a nonprofit board looking to start a charter goes into when they apply to the school district and get approved to be a charter. In this process, a charter management company or any company that invests in, again, what seems to be a pretty shady process for switching a school has the opportunity to inherit millions of dollars in capital capital investment, buildings, okay, classrooms, equipment, and it's invested. That short term investment of however many, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars it might take in a campaign results in millions of dollars in acquisition that are yours for all time. That is the concern that has continuously been raised in committee and by people who are opposed to this. That we as legislators, as policymakers, have to trust private interest to be private interest. I don't blame them for seeing an opportunity to engage in something that could result in absorbing all of that capital. But it's my job as a legislator to look for the ways that we may be opening the door to something that is not our intent. And we can look all across the economy in different markets to see moments when competitors have pooled their own resources to engage in advocacy that affects an industry. And that's what I'm worried about happening here. Not that one charter management company is going to come in and say and lay claim to one school, but that an industry, a door is open for industry to come in and engage in a process that if it's not built well, or frankly is built at all, could result into the privatization of some schools that are the most at risk with no opportunity to transfer it back.
I guess there's some fundamental differences of opinion there, but I want to ask you, Representative Saunders, if this bill does pass through the legislature, what do you think the chances are of Governor Scott signing it into law?
You know, that's a pretty good question. I'm not sure if his office has taken a hardline position. Patricia may know, actually, better than I, where his office is on this legislation. But I'll just say, to address the question you asked me before more directly, there are other options. If we all can sit around a table, no matter where we come from, what party we sit in, or what ideology we bring, and say our central premise is to engage parents, to empower parents to be a part of their kids' education, I will just say again that there are other options. Representative Ricardo Rangel has a great bill that would inspire schools to adopt wraparound services, that would bring social services into a school so that parents came into school to get the same social services that they get at other locations. While they're there, they're learning about what their kids are doing. They're getting the kinds of training that they need to help their kids with their homework. There's all kinds of really great, tested, uncontroversial ways that we can engage and empower parents. I don't think that the parent trigger bill is the way to do it. But if the train has left the station, let's do no harm on the parts that can do no harm. And I do hope we'll take a look at that requirement that says that if you, you know, are given a bad evaluation, you can't ever have a kid in your class in the same day. It has unintended consequences that could be devastating to programs around the state.
Well, Patricia Levick, let me ask you the same question. If this bill makes it through the legislature, what do you think of its chances of being given the go-ahead by Governor Scott?
Well, Matt, I think that's a question for Governor Scott, but given Governor Scott's excellent track record on empowering parents and believing in and supporting in parents having a choice, you know, I would hope that he would support the legislation, but I certainly cannot speak for Governor Scott. Matt, if you give me the opportunity, I just have to correct the misinformation that was provided where Representative Saunders indicated that somehow if parents choose a charter option and if the school board makes a decision to have a certain type of charter entity come in and run the school, it's absolutely untrue that the facilities and the land and all the equipment in perpetuity become the property of some charter school company. That is absolutely false. The land, the property, the furniture, the fixtures, the equipment, that all remains school board property. It all remains entrusted in the care of the school board. It all remains a taxpayer-owned asset. And indeed, charter schools are held to a higher standard than our traditional public schools. So if that charter school does not turn around, does not improve student learning, that charter school will be closed, and the school board will once again have the opportunity to figure out what they want to do to help intervene and turn around that school. And Representative Saunders has brought up this other part of the bill that I would say is the most important part of the bill. You know, a lot of attention is focused on the parent, quote, parent trigger. The most important provision in this bill is a provision that guarantees that every child, at least every other year, gets an effective teacher in his or her classroom. You know, we have 160,000 teachers in the state, and they are fantastic teachers. There may be a very, very small percentage of teachers that need a lot of professional development that may not be in the best profession for them. What the bill does is ensure that if your child or my child gets a particular teacher that may not be the best, most effective teacher, the next year the school district guarantees our child has to get an effective or highly effective teacher. That is one of the most important provisions for parents in this state, to guarantee their child's guarantee to an effective or a highly effective teacher. And in fact, it's really important for parents of kids at low-income schools, because what most school districts do when they assign teachers is they assign the newest, maybe the teachers who are most teaching out of field, teaching on emergency contracts, teachers who may be teachers who are in need of improvement. They assign more of those to the failing schools than they do to the rest of the schools in the district. And so what that provision that is so important does is guarantee that at least every other year our children get an effective or a highly effective teacher as rated by their principal in the school district.
You're listening to Intersection. I've been talking with Florida State Representative Joe Saunders of Orlando and Patricia Levick, Executive Director of the Foundation for Florida's Future, about the so-called Parent Trigger Bill. I want to thank you both very much for joining the program.
Thank you very much, and thanks for the debate, Patricia. I appreciated it.
Thank you, Matt, and thank you, Representative Saunders.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at wmfe.org/intersection. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Brendan Byrne is assistant producer. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.